Training to become a surgeon can feel like training for the Olympics. Then we finish and we realize we're just adults with jobs. Life after training is an entirely different landscape. You need to get to know you. What does success mean for you? What brings you joy? What's your purpose? I'm Dr. Mel Thacker, an ear, nose, and throat surgeon and coach. I'm here to help surgeons like you rediscover themselves. Welcome to Surgeons with Purpose. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. So today we are going to talk about mistakes. Mistakes are something we are all going to make. Mistakes will be made. Given that we are humans and humans are the ones doing surgery, we will inevitably err. It's just part of the deal. But how are we going to handle it? During this podcast, I'm going to teach you how to handle intraoperative mistakes using the example of a mistake I recently made. So listen to this episode as often as you need to. And when you do make a mistake, definitely come back to this podcast as a resource. I've shared with you mistakes that I've made in the past. On a previous podcast, I shared a complication that was completely my error. I violated the lamina during a sinus surgery. And for you non-ENTs, the lamina papyracea is a very thin layer of bone that protects the contents of the orbit. And during sinus surgery, it is a no-no to go through that guy. But I blasted through it and I got into a patient's orbital fat and they ended up with a black eye. Ultimately, they had no repercussions, but it was a very heightened emotional experience for me trying to manage myself and finish that case and then disclose to the patient and report that complication in my op note. And so I want to teach you how to do that so that you're prepared. There are two main sources for this podcast. One is a TED Talk by an emotions researcher, and the other is a book by a family and marriage psychologist. This book is called No Bad Parts by Dr. Richard Schwartz. We're going to talk a bit about part psychology to help you manage yourself when mistakes happen, because I find it very useful, and I think that you will also find it very useful. And then I also want to teach you about emotions. It is so incredibly important to understand what emotions are and how to manage them. And so I'm going to reference a TED Talk by psychologist Dr. Lisa Feldman Barrett, and I will leave links for both the book and the talk in the show notes for you to reference. What I want for you is to become, as Dr. Lisa Feldman Barrett says, the architect of your own experience. When you become the architect of your own experience, you intentionally write the ending of the story. The mistake writes the beginning, but how you show up in the face of a mistake is how you write the ending. So what are emotions? Emotions are sensations that are expressed as vibrations in the body. They mean nothing until we give them meaning, and our brain uses our past experiences to assign meaning to the emotional vibrations in our body. So everybody is different depending on your culture, your past experiences, etc., that inform how your brain makes predictions or interpretations of those bodily sensations. And so that's what I really want to talk about when I'm describing emotions today, is what kind of predictions your brain will create based on the sensations in your body. And then how can you separate yourself? How can you create some distance from that part of yourself so that you can show up in a way that actually serves the patient and serves you and serves the entire operating room team? So you can show up as the leader, as the highest version of yourself in the face of an error. One good example of how emotions are expressed as sensations in our body and then our brain concocts predictions and interpretations is the example of speaking anxiety. In a previous podcast, I talked about my TEDx talk. I talked about how one of the big lessons I learned about standing on that stage as someone who has historically suffered and struggled with crippling stage fright was to take the sensations in my body and reframe them as excitement. The racing heart, the clammy hands, the sweaty pits, sweating through my pantsuit, taking all of those sensations, and instead of trying to calm them down or make them go away, instead reframing them as excitement. I intentionally created a story, a very deliberate and conscious story in my brain about the physical sensations in my body. I chose to see those sensations not as anxiety, but as excitement instead. I am so excited to give this talk, is what I told myself. It's actually what I said out loud before I got on that stage. That's very different than trying to change the sensations in our body, trying to take a super high energy vibration like anxiety and push it down or make it go away. It's almost like trying to pump the brakes and it doesn't work. And so a better way to manage yourself in these high energy emotions like anxiety or fear is instead to use your brain to tell yourself a different story about the physical sensations in your body. Another example that Dr. Lisa Feldman Barrett talks about in her TED Talk is the turning of your stomach. So if you walk into a bakery and you expect to smell all of the wonderful smells of delicious baked goods, and maybe your stomach starts churning because you feel hungry and you're preparing to eat a delicious croissant, that is a physical sensation in your body that's going to be interpreted as hunger or desire based on your circumstances. But you might also have the same kind of gut sensations when you're about to receive the results of a mammogram. That could be interpreted as dread. So hunger and dread can be very similar physical sensations, and your brain makes predictions based on those physical sensations depending on the circumstances. And so emotional distress is actually something we have a lot more control over, because we control the stories that we tell ourselves using our brain. And that's the message of this TED Talk, is that we create our emotional experience. And emotional distress can actually become just physical discomfort when we drop the story attached to the experience. They're just predictions. They aren't truths. And so I'll get back to that point, but it's really important to share that with you upfront, that you may have a physical sensation in your body. You may have a lot of physical sensations in your body when you make a mistake. I want you to be able to control the story that you're telling yourself about that. Controlling your predictions, managing the stories in your brain that you tell yourself about the emotions in your body, which are based on your past experiences, managing all of that is how you become an architect of your own experience. And when you make a mistake, you definitely want to become the architect of your own experience. You don't want your emotions to take you on a ride that you didn't sign up for, or to reduce your cognitive capacity, because you need to access your brain in that moment so that you can take the next right action, so you can troubleshoot the problem, so you can show up as the highest version of yourself and serve the patient and be the humble leader. And so by having control of your emotions, you control your ability to process information and to make decisions. I like to think of this as a shrinking and an expanding of our headspace. When we allow certain negative emotions to overwhelm us, we shrink our cognitive capacity. We aren't able to access our deep knowledge. It's like your brain is a room. And when you are in fear and overwhelm and confusion and distress and dread and panic, that room becomes really, really small. It's almost like you blind yourself when you let yourself go down the spiral of doom and gloom. But there are certain emotions that you can generate intentionally that expand your cognitive capacity. And the main one that I will talk to you about is curiosity. Curiosity is such a phenomenal emotion that expands your cognitive capacity. Make curiosity your best friend. And I'm going to teach you how to keep that expansiveness in your headspace. When you make a mistake, you need that expansiveness. You need that wide open headspace to know how to troubleshoot the problem, to make the next decision, to take the next right action. So first, I want to be really clear that when you make a mistake, you own it. Your mistake, your business. This is very different than post-op complications that are not surgeon specific. Mistakes are surgeon specific complications. This isn't like a post-op complication, like a post-op infection or post-op bleeding days later or something that leaks or a wound that dehisces. Those kinds of complications are not in your jurisdiction. They are not yours to own. They are circumstances in the world that you don't have any control over. And so this goes back to the three businesses. There are three businesses according to Byron Katie: your business, other people's business, and the universe's business. And post-op complications are the universe's business, whereas mistakes, intraoperative mistakes made by you, are your business. It is 100% something that you own versus a complication that comes on because of the universe's business, because of factors outside of your control. Like, you can't possibly manage all of the germs in the world. You don't manage the bacteria of the world. And so you can't take ownership of a patient's infected wound. Obviously, if you fail to give a patient antibiotics when they're indicated, then sure, you can take some ownership there. But if you're doing everything correctly and the patient ends up having an infection of their wound, You can't take ownership of it. You don't have to. You can't manage certain patient factors like nutritional status or body habitus. And I'm not judging patients. I'm merely saying that complications that come from outside factors like patient factors or universe factors are not your business and they are not yours to own. Not to say that you don't help the patient or manage the patient or show up in service to the patient. 100% I advocate that you do that. What I'm saying is that you don't take ownership of the circumstances in your own brain. Like you don't think, oh, I hurt this patient or I hurt this person. Your intention was not to give that person a wound infection. You intended to help them. We merely just show up for the patient without having thoughts about it is kind of the idea. We don't create drama for ourselves. We can choose not to manhandle those types of circumstances when we see them as not our business. Those types of post-op complications that we didn't create with our mistakes. Wounds are going to pus, wounds are going to dehisce, people are going to bleed. These things are going to happen whether we want them to or not. And so what do? You do all the right things for the patient. You take them back to the operating room, drain the abscess, whatever you need to do to get that patient some resolution, but without the brain drama. But we do have agency over the mistakes we make. Those are ours to own. And so inevitably, they're going to be accompanied with some brain drama. They are squarely in our business. We own all of them. And I'm not saying that in a way that you should blame yourself or shame yourself. Absolutely not. I'm merely saying that humans are doing surgery. And because humans are fallible creatures, we're going to make mistakes. I have made mistakes. You have made mistakes. No human has ever been perfect through their entire surgical career. And so that's why I want you to have this podcast, to be able to manage yourself when that does happen. And you will feel guilty, which is okay. Guilt is very different than shame. Guilt says, I did something bad. Shame says, I am bad. And feeling guilt is a normal experience. When you make a mistake, guilt is expected. Guilt is something that you can welcome and allow. It means that you're human and that you care. But what I want you to not do, what I caution you not to do, is to let yourself shame and blame yourself because you are not inherently bad. You are not inherently unworthy or broken because you made a mistake. You are not the mistake. Your actions were the mistake. You made a bad move. So what happens within us when we do make a mistake? A part of us or all of us is going to want to go into survival mode. This is the amygdala hijack. The mistake will often be interpreted by our brain as a threat to our survival. There is a shrinking of our cognitive capacity, and we can't access our executive function or make logical decisions as easily, which is really not useful. And it can be the very first domino that leads to confusion, overwhelm, self-doubt, uncertainty, dread, and panic. There is no scenario where confusion, overwhelm, self-doubt, uncertainty, dread, and panic are helpful in the operating room. And that's why I want you to understand your emotions and your brain and learn how to become the architect of your own experience when this happens to you. So what do I mean by shrinking your cognitive capacity? Allow me to use the example of my daughter. So the other day, my 9-year-old daughter came into our bedroom at 6:30 in the morning and said, with fear in her face and fear in her voice, I just had a bad dream. She looked distressed. She said, I'm scared. Mama, can you come with me? And so in my sleepy state, I get out of bed and I throw some clothes on and I join her. And she's walking, looking kind of dazed and scared, turning all the lights on. We go downstairs. She starts turning all the lights on. And she's clearly in this full-blown fear response. It's like she doesn't recognize the safety of her current circumstances. She's in that story that her brain has told her when she was asleep. She's in the imagination. She's in the movie. She's visualized all these pictures in her mind that have terrified her. And that's what she is reacting to. She's fully enthralled in that experience. And it's like taking over her whole headspace and it's blinding her and it's stopping her from actually seeing what's true in the real world. And so I'm observing this and I'm thinking about our actual reality. And I'm like, wow, like we're in this house in Massachusetts, in this beautiful neighborhood. We're all safe and alive. Like I am here. I'm her mother. I'm safe. Her father's upstairs. He's safe. Her brother's upstairs. He's safe. We have this little cute bunny named Daisy, who is adorable and safe. And we have these woods in the back of our house. And it was the first snow of the winter. And all of the trees of the woods are covered in this beautiful dusting of white snow. And the sun is coming up in the morning. and it's shining on the snow, and there's like a twinkling, and it looks like a little winter wonderland type picture outside. And so I'm just taking stock of everything that's actually happening. I'm so amazed and fascinated that my little daughter, my sweet little daughter, is not aware of any of it. Like, she is in no danger, but her body is acting as though she's in danger because of the prediction, the interpretation she made of the story she told herself while she was sleeping. And that is basically what anxiety is. It is the fear response applied to our imagination. Nothing was threatening my daughter, and yet she felt threatened just because of the stories in her head. And that shrunk her cognitive capacity to a point that she couldn't even have an awareness of what was true in the real world. She was blinded to the truth of her reality. And that is the fight or flight response. That is the survival emergency response. When we are threatened, whether we are threatened by pictures in our head or if we are threatened by something that is actually threatening us, like a bear is actually chasing us, our bodies cannot tell the difference. And so we will go into fight or flight regardless if it's real or if it's not real. And that is so fascinating. And so let's say you're in the operating room and you make a wrong move. Something happens. You cause some sort of tissue damage. You cause something to bleed. You fuck up somehow. Now you're trying to manage that mistake in real time. What happens inside of you? What you will want to do is you will want to identify with the fear part of you. But what I want to offer you is to allow yourself to split into three parts. And you make an intraoperative mistake, and now you are going to split into three parts inside of your brain. One part is going to be the fear part. That part will be the loudest. But I'm asking you not to identify with it. Instead, observe it. Observe yourself break into these parts and engage with each one of the parts. What do I mean by this? Let me talk to you about my recent experience. So I made a mistake a few weeks ago. I caused a patient a burn in their nasal ala. While I was cauterizing the septal incision with bipolar, I thought the tip was protected. I thought I was protecting the nasal ala, but it created a superficial burn in the skin of her nostril. And in that moment, I split into these three parts. One part was fear, the other was certainty, and the third was curiosity. So let's examine these parts. The fear part of me was in full fight or flight. It told me stories like, how could you have done that? You're a horrible person for not paying attention. Why was your brain scattered and not noticing that the patient's going to sue you? They're going to have an ugly scar. They're going to get a keloid. That part of me started to feel self-conscious about what the CRNA, the scrub tech, and the nurse in the room thought about me, and how they might be judging me for not paying attention. That part of me also wanted to blame. That part of me desperately wanted to blame the circulating nurse for not giving me the bipolar that I typically use. And now I've spoken about blame before on this podcast, but it's worth repeating. The definition of blame is a discharge of pain. And so that part of me was so cognitively shrunken. It was so small. The room was so retracted and tiny that it wasn't enough space to hold that pain. It wasn't a big enough container to hold the pain of the circumstances. And it was too much for that part of me, that fear part. And so that part of me wanted to blame the nurse for giving me the bipolar. It couldn't hold the weight of the circumstances of the burn, of the mistake. And so it wanted to discharge it onto someone else. And I've talked about this before. As surgeons, we do this. When we make a mistake, we're like, oh, it's anesthesia's fault, right? That is a discharge of pain when we blame others. And so I watched my brain do this. I'm not identifying with it, but I'm watching it. And I'm engaging with that side of myself with compassion. Like, okay, oh, you think that this patient is going to think you're a hack. You're thinking that, what are your peers going to say about you? You're worried about getting sued. You're worried about what's going to happen to your reputation. You're wanting to shame yourself. Okay. You want to blame the nurse. Interesting. And I'm watching that fear side of me do its thing. And then another part of me broke into certainty. What do I know for sure? Well, I caused superficial burn. It will likely heal. It will probably heal pretty well. And let me dictate this note and let me disclose it to the patient and her family to make sure that they know that I made this error, that it was my fault, and that I take full responsibility for it. Let me be as transparent, open, and honest as possible. And let me just get very grounded so that I can complete this surgery for this patient and be present for every step of the surgery to get to the end of it and not let myself be distracted and shrunken by the fact that I made a mistake. And then the third part of my brain went into curiosity. And this is so important. If you can generate curiosity, it will expand your cognitive capacity because curiosity is an emotion that actually enhances learning and memory through the activation of the brain's reward system, which releases dopamine and promotes deeper engagement with new information when someone is genuinely curious about something. And so you open up this space for learning, for receiving new information, for observational awareness. Curiosity enhances attentional processes during learning that lead to immediate memory benefits. So now you're able to take in new information when you're curious. You're not shrinking your brain. You're creating like a wide open brain space that allows you to take stock of reality, that allows you to actually see reality so that you're not blinding yourself. And that is so useful in the operating room. Anxiety comes from your left amygdala. Fear comes from your left amygdala. And that's why we call it the amygdala hijack, where your body is like, okay, we're in survival mode. We're being threatened. We don't need to solve any problems or make any decisions. Let's just try and survive. And so it shuts that process down. It shuts your ability to access your executive function down. Contrast that to curiosity, which comes from your right amygdala, your right emotional brain, that opens everything up. And it gives you full ability to access your logical reasoning, thinking, high functioning brain. It helps you process and learn and have awareness. And so curiosity is such a beautiful place to be. It's such a beautiful emotion to generate whenever you're not sure what to do. You can even audibly say, just to kind of signal to yourself that you're getting curious. What do I know for sure? Okay, let me take stock of things I know for certain. I know I am safe. I'm not going to allow myself to enter into that fear part of me that's in fight or flight because I know it's not useful, but I am going to move into curiosity. Now, if you buy into your fear, if you let yourself go into fight or flight, what happens is that your cognitive capacity shrinks, primarily because the heightened stress response that's triggered by fear can negatively impact brain regions responsible for memory and reasoning, like the hippocampus, potentially leading to difficulties concentrating and making clear decisions. And so that's the amygdala activation. So it's not useful for you to buy into the fear. It's not useful to have difficulties concentrating or to have impaired decision making and to have memory problems when you're actively trying to troubleshoot a mistake, when you're trying to decide, how do I repair this tear? How do I stop this bleeding? What is my next right move? You need your ability to concentrate and to make good decisions while you are trying to troubleshoot a mistake. So when you look at these parts, as you're breaking into these parts, where you're in kind of like the throes of the post-mistake time period, I want you to realize that you are none of these parts. And this is what Dr. Richard Schwartz calls self with a capital S. And so when you're in that space, when you're in that mindfulness, when you've created that distance where you have an awareness, you're the curious observer, you are the watcher of your own experience, you are the observer of your own brain. You are merely watching without judgment and without trying to change anything, what your human brain is doing. The act of separating yourself from all of you, all of your parts, immediately dissolves the emotional response. It dissolves that overwhelm and that confusion by creating that distance from those stories that your brain is telling you, the fear part of your brain is telling you. It gives you some discernment. So I want you to almost like think of yourself as like helicoptering over yourself and watching yourself in real time. You're watching your brain have a freak out. You're watching it tell yourself stories like, this patient's gonna sue me, my career is over, I'm a big hack, I'm the worst, I hurt this person, who do I think I am? I'm the worst surgeon in the world. Just watch your brain do that without actually buying into it or giving it the microphone and being like, okay, you be the decision maker. All right, person in fight or flight, like, here you go, you make all the decisions. Instead of doing that, like, have some discernment, separate yourself from it, engage with it, love that side of you, recognize that that side of you, that fearful side of you, is trying to keep you safe. and then consciously and deliberately get yourself into certainty and curiosity. When you're able to get yourself into that certainty and curiosity, it's not that you stop the fear part from doing its thing. There is going to be a period of time after the mistake where you're going to feel like shit. That is normal. But if you can give yourself the distance to look at that part of you as self with a capital S without identifying with it, it softens the distress. It softens the discomfort. And the last thing I'll offer you is that when you're in this, when you're in kind of like this post-mistake period, to try to become the narrator of your experience. Like, just notice what's going on with you and narrate every step of the way. You can be like, okay, well, now I am catastrophizing. All right, well, now I'm ruminating. All right, I'm going over every single thing that I did, and I'm thinking about how I could have stopped myself from doing that. And I'm wanting to beat myself up for not noticing it ahead of time. And I'm thinking of how in a split second, I could have prevented that error. All right, now I am catastrophizing again. Now I'm wanting to call the patient and check in on them incessantly. And so just watch yourself do that. And when, before you take action, before you take any sort of action for the patient who is on the receiving end of your mistake, I want you to ask yourself these questions. Is it for me or is it for the patient? Are you taking action for yourself or are you taking action for the patient? And I had to do that after I made my mistake, because what I wanted to do was to call her up on the phone every single day and check in on her. But it wasn't for her, it was for me. And so I didn't do that. Instead, I disclosed the error. I apologized. I gave her my cell phone. I put it in her hands to reach out to me if she had any questions or any issues. And then I let a couple of days go by. And in those couple of days, I was in some negative emotion. I was in some discomfort, but I didn't take any action from that place. And then after a couple of days passed, I did call and check in on her, but I made sure I was doing it from a place of service to her, not to make myself feel better. Okay. And so that's the last thing I will leave you with, is to ask yourself, is this for me or is this for my patient? And then always make sure you take action for the patient and be kind to yourselves. Okay. When you make a mistake, hold yourself in compassion. So just to recap, emotions are vibrations in your body. They are sensations in your body, and you have more control over them than you realize by changing the stories in your brain. So when you have a story in your brain, if you buy into it and it takes you down a spiral of doom and gloom into overwhelm, confusion, dread, and panic, it's not going to be useful for you. It's going to cause you shrunken cognitive capacity, and you're not going to be able to troubleshoot the problem as easily. But if you just observe that part of yourself, you'll create some distance and then try to create new parts like certainty and curiosity and move into those parts while holding that fear part with some compassion and love, okay? And engaging with it, not shoving it down or ignoring it or avoiding it, but instead engaging with it. And then take action from that place of curiosity and certainty. And you can even notice how you're none of those parts, because you're kind of jumping from each one and you're watching all three. And then afterwards, in the aftermath, be kind to yourself, be compassionate to yourself, be transparent, honest, and open with the patient and their family, and then only take action for the patient. Do not take action for yourself. And that is how you manage yourself and you become the architect of your experience in the face of an error. I hope you guys have a great week, and I will see you next week. Take care. Hey, when you got into surgery, when you were bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, you told yourself a story that it was going to be amazing, and it's not. That's okay. If you want to learn how to navigate the landscape of life after training, you are in luck. I have created a course just for you. It's called Empowered Surgeons Curriculum. It gives you everything you need to learn that you didn't learn in training about how to be a human in the world of surgery. All you have to do is go to courses.melthackercoaching.com/courses/empowered surgeon or click the link in the show notes. See you inside the course.